Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
How you doing? And welcome to the show. I'm so excited to tell you that syndicated technology columnist Mark Saltzman is here to talk about the new iPhone 4S. Mark was actually at the unveiling in California and got to test out the new phone and try the much-talked-about voice assistant, Siri. We also have a new segment on the show called Almost Mother of the Year with blogger Casey Savage of the Home Shopping Network. And finally, we talk about being safe in and around your neighborhood with personal safety expert David Nance.
Capture your need for sound.
The big news that's come out this month is the latest version of the iPhone. A lot of Apple fans were expecting to hear about an iPhone 5, but Apple threw a bit of a curveball and came out with the iPhone 4S. To tell us all about this new smartphone is syndicated technology columnist Mark Saltzman, who was at the actual unveiling in California. Mark, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks for having me.
Mark, I guess right off the top, I have to ask you if you were surprised that no iPhone 5 came out. Did you expect to see it?
I did. You know, I mean, some years they have major improvements to their smartphones and other years are more marginal. And this was, you know, and at least initially, it doesn't seem like there's a huge jump over the existing iPhone. But the iPhone 4S does have more features under the hood. It looks identical to last year's model. But, you know, along with a better camera and faster processor and better wireless connectivity, the feature I think that got everybody excited, and this wasn't unveiled until the end of the event, by the way, the feature that everybody was talking about is called Siri, S-I-R-I. And this is best described as like a personal assistant. You talk to your iPhone like you would a friend, and the information that you're looking for is immediately displayed or said by this female voice. So it's pretty cool. You could say, do I need a rain jacket today? And it'll say, no, you won't need a rain jacket today, and it'll show you the weather. Or you can say, you know, I feel like Italian food, what's around me? And it'll show you restaurants displayed by rating that fits your criteria. So everything you say is understood, not just transcribed into text, which also is a part of it. For example, you can talk your emails or text messages out, and it'll show up as text in the phone, or it'll read your text messages to you. So it's got all these really cool bells and whistles. So I think that is going to be the killer app for the iPhone 4S.
And with regards to this, I guess, voice-powered assistant, how accurate do you think it's going to be, Mark? Is it going to hold up in the real world?
Well, I did test it after the event. I did get some hands-on time with the iPhone 4S, and surprisingly, it was quite accurate, almost 100%. I would say, what's the weather in Toronto? And it would say, here's the weather in Toronto, Mark, and it would show you the weather. So it understood everything I said. There was one instance where I wanted to add an entry to my calendar, and it got one word wrong or something. So, I mean, really, it's pretty clever. And that was in a noisy room as well. So I think that, you know, Apple has really innovated when it comes to the interface. We moved away from sort of a mouse and keyboard interface to a touch-based one, you know, largely due to Apple with the iPhone and the iPod Touch and the iPad. And now we're moving, I believe, into the next phase, which is voice interaction. And there's still a ways to go, but, you know, it was science fiction when, you know, in Star Trek, when Captain Kirk was talking to the computer and getting an answer from the artificial intelligence. But I think we're inching towards that, and the iPhone 4S is definitely the first step towards that.
Regarding the camera part of it, I know because I was reading a few articles, obviously, all afternoon long about, you know, the 4S and the thing that came up apart from this voice-powered assistant was the camera. So what's your take on it?
Yeah, so definitely a better camera. And we are using our smartphone as a camera. And now there are fewer trade-offs for doing so. So instead of a 5-megapixel camera with last year's model, it's now an 8-megapixel camera. So you can print off, you know, an 8x10 glossy photo, and it'll look gorgeous. It also has better optics technology overall for better low light performance and richer colors. Plus, it lets you now shoot HD video in up to 1080p quality, which is the highest, you know, quality video recording capability there is. So last year it was 720p, now it's 1080p. Again, it's more evolutionary than revolutionary. You know, these enhancements that have been added aren't over the top. They are what's to be expected, a faster processor, better camera, you know, better wireless connectivity. But I think that this series feature is really the one that's going to get everybody buzzing.
And with regards, I have to ask you as well, the speed thing, is that really going to make a big difference to regular users, or is it really for gamers?
Well, you know, for anyone who downloads through cellular connectivity, so I'm not talking about Wi-Fi when you're in a wireless network, but if you're, say, on a park bench or on a moving train and you want to access the web faster or download content faster, you're now going to get up to twice the speed. So they really have improved that. Some, you know, Apple stopped short of calling it 4G, which is, you know, a buzzword that's really a loose one because there's the criteria for 4G performances all over the map. But without question, in the U.S., especially where I am right now, that they have a lot of, you know, reception issues and dead pockets and things like that. So reception is a sticky point for any smartphone maker. In Canada, we're a bit privileged. You know, we've got very reliable, high-speed access everywhere. But even still, with the iPhone 4S, you will get even greater speeds because of this dual antenna approach that Apple says they're the first to employ.
Joining us on the show this week is syndicated technology columnist Mark Saltzman from Toronto. Make sure you check him out. The best place to do that on Facebook, facebook.com/Mark Saltzman. Now, Mark, I have to ask you, we talked briefly about it, the fact that the 4S looks, you know, identical to the 4. Were you disappointed that the hardware was the same? Did they need to change anything on it?
Yeah, if I were Apple, I think that, you know, definitely faster processor, better camera, that's all to be expected. But if I were Apple, I would have introduced a larger screen. I think that we're starting to use our smartphones more like a computer, not just for something to talk on or to type on. So I would have preferred a 4 or 4.5 inch touchscreen display for playing games and watching video and the like. So I was a bit disappointed that it was the exact same hardware, the exact same design with the 3.5 inch screen. But I guess I understand it. You know, Apple right now has the number one selling smartphone in the world. So, you know, why rock the boat? So I guess they're playing it safe and they're saying, well, everybody likes our design, so why don't we just change the guts of the machine and innovate there? And, you know, for the iPhone 5, we'll change the game again. So, you know, as the name suggests, it's the iPhone 4S. It's S stands for speed. It's really not meant to be a huge radical redesign. But I think the reason why many people were disappointed is because Apple never tells you what they're going to unveil, and you couple that with the fact that Apple has a huge and loyal following. So as a result, it causes all these rumors to run rampant online. You know, everybody's predicting what the next Apple product's going to look like and behave like. So I think as a result, you're always going to be disappointed because it's never going to live up to your imagination. So just to keep it in check, it is better than last year's version in a number of ways. It's the same price as when the iPhone 4 debuted. And again, this feature called Siri is really something that you need to experience to get. It's really impressive.
The models, I'm assuming, the same as all the other ones, the 16 and 32 and so on?
Yes, that's correct. So the memory, the configuration is the same. But keep in mind that the iPhone 4S is also going to be the first smartphone to ship with the new iCloud and the new iOS software. Both of those are debuting on the 14th of October next week. And these are, you know, updates to the iOS 5 is their new operating system, which has 200 or so more features. And then iCloud is the ability to access content even if it's not stored on your device. So even though you may be limited in local storage, you're going to be able to access content in the cloud or on the internet as if it was stored locally on your smartphone. So it becomes less of an issue if you, say, only have a 16 gig device and you want to access things that you typically only were able to on a 32 gig device.
And just a quick question, because I was reading something online about that iCloud, and I wanted to ask you, for people who are sort of sitting at home going, I don't understand. So let's say they get the 4S, they have this access to iCloud. Does that mean then that all their Apple devices will have access to iCloud as well?
That's right. So iCloud is a way of uploading and sharing content between all of your devices in the cloud. And the cloud is just a slang term for the internet. And it's essentially the ability to download, let's say you download music on your computer, on your iTunes, on your computer, and it, all those songs magically appear on your iPhone and iPad and iPod Touch at the same time. So that's an example of iCloud applications. Or you take a picture on your new iPhone 4S or another iPhone, and that photo is automatically synchronized with your iPad or your home computer. So it's a way of sharing your music, your apps, your audiobooks, your photos, and other content between all of your devices instead of having to tether one to the other and copy it. You know, like right now, if I take pictures on my iPhone, unless I email them, I have to connect it to my computer with a white cable and manually drag and drop the photos over to my computer, unplug it, and then they're on my computer. Whereas with the iCloud, whatever photos I take on my iPhone are automatically appearing on my computer.
I think a lot of people are going to love that ability.
Yeah, you know, cloud computing, we're all moving towards it, and Apple certainly isn't the first or only company that's embracing this technology. But it is meant to, you know, to make things easier, more seamless, and save us some time. You know, again, you take pictures with your camera, you got to, you know, eject the memory card and plug it into your computer and drag it. It's a pain. So the idea behind the cloud is that we're always connected to the internet in some way, shape, or form, whether it's over cellular connectivity or Wi-Fi, maybe at a coffee shop or in your home or at work. So all your content should be accessible wherever you are at any time on any device.
That's amazing. And I have to ask you this, Mark, because I think there's a lot of people sitting at home now, again, because I think, like you mentioned off the top, a lot of people were expecting, you know, the 5 and a big change or whatever. So with regards to the 4S, should all of us, you know, 3GS and iPhone 4 users be looking to upgrade, or should we be waiting?
Well, if there's going to be a penalty for canceling your contract, I would say stick with what you got. You know, the iPhone 4, I think, is a terrific phone as it is. Even with the new one that's better and, you know, cooler, I still think the iPhone 4 is a great phone. Plus, the iPhone 4 and 3GS, they're both eligible to download the new software, iOS 5, on October 14th and access the cloud, iCloud. Also, you know, launching that day. So it's really, you know, I think the one thing you'll miss is Siri. And I asked Apple today why, if it sounds like it's software-based, you press and hold the home button and then talk to your smartphone. If it's software-based, why can't people who own an older iPhone download that? And they said that it does need that faster processor, that new dual-core A5 chip that's in the new iPhone 4S. It's the same technology that's powering the iPad, too, tablet. They said you need that kind of horsepower for this to work. So I think Siri is the killer app. If you're going to want to upgrade, it's because you have a friend that shows you how cool it is to, you know, ask to tell your phone, make an appointment at 12 o'clock for lunch with Kelly, and it'll automatically populate your calendar for you with that. You know, just by saying it into your phone. We've never seen that before.
No, and I think that's amazing because I hate typing in my appointments.
It's those little menial tasks that make it so much easier. Like today I pressed the button and I said, take me to the Golden Gate Bridge. And right away it pulled up the Google Maps and showed me the, you know, how to get to, you know, the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge from where I was in Cupertino outside of San Jose. So it was like seamless. Instead of having to open up the app manually, typing in Golden Gate Bridge, like it's just the voice technology is really very cool.
That's amazing. And just before I let you go, Mark, again, I know, and you and I have talked about this before, how Apple, again, keeps, you know, the cards close to their chest. But do you think in the coming months we will see some sort of difference with an iPad, like an iPad 3?
Yeah, so again, I was hoping they would hint at something today, given the fact there's a lot more competition in the tablet space. But we will not likely hear anything about iPad 3 until early 2012. Apple has the commanding market share in the tablet space. You know, more than 3 out of 4 tablets sold are iPads, let's face it. So I guess they don't feel like they need to hint or reveal what they're working on next. They're keeping their competition in the dark as well. And, you know, I'm super excited. I can honestly say, and I'm a PC guy, I'm a Windows guy, by the way. I might sound like an Apple fanboy, but really I'm a Windows guy. I can honestly say though, that the iPad is my favorite gadget ever that never leaves my side.
Wow.
So I'm personally and professionally excited about what's coming down the road for iPad 3. But I think we're going to have to wait a few more months for that.
Okay, excellent. Mark, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Again, that's Mark Saltzman, a syndicated technology columnist from Toronto. Make sure you check him out on Facebook, facebook.com/Mark Saltzman.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
I am thrilled to welcome my next guest to the show. She and I went to university together in the same program, Radio and Television Arts, and we ended up working on a bunch of projects together throughout the years, and we got into all kinds of crazy, and what we thought at the time was very creative shenanigans with all of these cool projects that we're doing. She's one of the most talented and witty people that I know who works in the entertainment industry, including her efforts on the Home Shopping Network and her very awesome blog called Almost Mother of the Year. Casey Savage, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks for having me, Kelly. It is so great to speak to you again, and I just can't believe that we are two graduates of that program that actually have employment. It's fantastic.
It's true. I think a lot of people that we graduated with, I know one went to work in a bank, which was not
oh, really?
What we were, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that makes three people that have employment then.
This is true. Now, I have to, I guess, start off with you asking about, you know, how and why you started your Almost Mother of the Year blog.
Well, it just makes, the reason I started it actually, and it kind of makes me laugh, is so often I'll be at the park and I'll hear people say, how do you do it? How do you manage? I've got three boys, and at one point they were all under the age of three. That's when I could, you know, kind of understand what they were talking about. But then I realized not too long ago at the park that I can somehow create this illusion that everything is perfect, but actually it's falling apart at the seams at all times. So then I thought, you know what, Almost Mother of the Year is this totally tongue-in-cheek way of me relaying information and experiences that I have with these three boys in my daily life and parenting them and so on and so forth and all the craziness that happens that people can actually relate to.
Like, okay.
You know, no one wants to see how things are done in a perfect world. They want to laugh and chuckle along at my own, you know, mishaps and so on. And that's really what happens in real life. And that's why I started the website.
Okay, excellent. Now, I have to ask you this. Since you've, you know, started the blog and the website, have you learned more things about yourself as a woman and as a mother? Because right now, like with this blog, essentially you see what you're doing now on paper. So it's staring you back in the face.
Well, one thing is when you're doing it one at a time, your life gets so busy, you tend not to look back and reflect on these things. But occasionally I'll look back at past posts and I'll think, wow, I actually have put a lot into this. And I used to have another blog actually where at the end of it all, I was printing it off and I had something like, you know, 70 entries stacking up coming out of my printer. And then I thought to myself, wow, I really put a lot of effort into this. And then when you reread it, you gain that perspective that you don't have when you're just bogged down with daily life. So reading and writing, and especially the writing on a blog, really is kind of therapeutic.
And has, you know, seeing how you handle motherhood in print, you know, looking back at these posts that you've done, has it, you know, made you change your tactics at all in the way you approach your boys? Or do you still sort of forge ahead in the same Casey Savage manner at all times?
Actually, it's kind of good because when you see how ridiculous and idiotic you are sometimes in print, it helps you to laugh when you're in a stressful situation because you're thinking to yourself, you know what, this is actually going to look pretty funny when I write it down, which might be the wrong perspective. Instead of, why are you kids driving me insane? I'll be thinking to myself, you know what, if I can take myself out of this situation, I would be laughing at it. So that actually does help you cope.
Okay, good. Joining us on the show right now is Casey Savage. Again, she has her blog. You have to check it out, Almost Mother of the Year. And it's a very simple, almostmotheroftheyear.blogspot.com. Now, I know, Case, that your latest blog entry talks about all things Halloween involving you and the boys. Now, to start off, what are your personal sentiments about Halloween?
Why are you asking me this? I thought this was supposed to be lighthearted and fun. This, honestly, Halloween is... It's something that I loathe. Starting November 1st, I start thinking about how much I hate Halloween leading up to the next Halloween. Because I'm a bit, and if you read my blog, you'll see this, I'm a little bit of, I'm health conscious, we shall say, and I don't have any fun foods. Kids would think that, you know, junk and stuff is a fun food, and I tend not to have those in the house. So my kids, some would argue, are deprived of the finer things in life that maybe have a stick attached to them. So I don't have any of that stuff really kicking around the house. So I think I'm doing my kids a favor, but actually it's quite a disaster because anytime they're around junk, they lunge at it like wild dogs. They just, they will take down anyone in their path to gorge on chips if chips are present. So I've actually done them a disservice, but I still continue to tell myself that by depriving them of treats, they will be better off in life. So when Halloween rolls around, I'm just this ball of anxiety thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to eat all this junk. I'm going to watch them eating junk. So I've kind of laid out all these rules to try and make something I dislike as much as Halloween a little more palatable.
Okay, so you have to tell me then about these rules. And I guess this involves the candy. So if you can sort of, you know, I guess tell us how you view the candy. I'm getting the gist that you do not let the boys go buck wild.
No. I don't. So mean mom, okay, I mean mom, everyone. I'll just get it out there now, put it on my license plate. Mean mom doesn't let her kids eat a pillowcase filled to the brim with junk. And keep in mind, my kids are 4, 5, and 7. So, I mean, they're not 16 here. They're tiny little things. So what I do is I think this is pretty reasonable, and I've convinced myself that I'm teaching them a good life lesson, is when they get back from trick-or-treating, even though they have puny little bags, trick-or-treat bags, but that's something totally different, I tell them you're allowed to keep 15 candies, and then that is absolutely it. Pick your 15 favorites, choose wisely, use whatever strategy you want to choose in deciding, and then I will take the rest, and I put it back in my giant then-by-the-door distribution bowl. And then I dish it out to all the surly teens that ring your doorbell at, you know, late at night when all your lights are out and your pumpkin's been smashed and stuff. Then I actually leave it for them. I usually leave it on the porch with a sign, free, take me, take all, get out of here. No more candy in this house.
Wow.
So that's one of my techniques.
Okay, okay. So and you said a small baggie for their actual, so there's no plastic, you know, Halloween bucket that they go out with.
There is no bucket. There is, it probably holds a total of say 30 to 40 candies max. So they have to kind of look through it and pick and choose. And they really only do our one street. So that's another thing. You got to keep your kids' standards low, real low. They don't even know you can go onto other streets. Like, this is information that has never crossed their minds. They think trick-or-treating is your own street. Come home, pick your 15, go to bed, and the end of Halloween. So I got it all figured out here, and I'm glad and happy to be providing these tips.
I appreciate
this. For free.
Yes, for free. Now, okay, so that's the candy aspect of things. Now, I guess, what's your strategy for costumes? Now, do you let the kids pick?
Oh,
are they store-bought costumes, or do you have them made? And I guess, can you give us an example of recent Halloween moments of costumes?
You know, I'm such an idiot. I actually, every year, even though I loathe this holiday, this Halloween, I just can't stand it. But then there's that competitive part of me that wants my kids' costumes to look better than everyone else's. So I've convinced myself that I'm this, you know, Academy Award-winning costume designer, even though I don't even know how to hem a pair of pants. So I get the sewing machine out. I come up with some crazy idea that usually I'll ask them while they're watching TV, so they're kind of nodding with their eyes glazed, like, hey, kids, how about the three of you are Alvin and the Chipmunks? Because, you know, there's three of them, so I like to keep things simple. And then they'll nod, not paying attention, and then I'll just go out, get some fabric, sew up something that's quite hastily made. And then come Halloween night, they don't want any part of it. And then the times I have asked them what they want to be, it's ridiculous things. Like one year, my eldest son wanted to be a lampshade. A lampshade. Like, do you know what this did to his reputation? Everyone showed up in their super Power Ranger, whatever, superhero costumes from the local big box store. And what's he wearing? I literally put a lampshade on his head and cut out eye holes. Like, this is not good for a kid's reputation. So, I don't know. I'm just telling you right now that store-bought is probably the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not creating the childhood memories that these kids probably desire.
And a question as well, because I know you mentioned that, you know, you got the three of them and they're all close in age. and you try to keep it simple. So does that mean every year? Because I mean, your oldest, like you said, is 7, and then you got a 5 and a 4-year-old. So for the last like 3 years, let's say, have they always dressed in tandem, like, or in triodom? Like, it's always the same theme?
They sure have. 1 year was Alvin and the Chipmunks. Then last year they were werewolves. Although if you look at the picture on my blog, at least three people, mind you, who grew up in the 80s, such as myself, asked if they were John Candy's character Barf from Spaceballs. So clearly there was a sewing mishap in that costume department. And if you look at them on the blog, it is pretty pathetic. And my poor eldest, he's not even in the picture because he refused to pose for the photo. He was sure he'd get beaten up. Like, I don't know what I'm thinking here. It's just this sick competitive edge mixed with this desire to keep my kids healthy that is creating all sorts of just craziness in my life. I bring it upon myself, I'll admit it. But you know what? They'll get through it.
And
it doesn't kill you, right?
Exactly. And the funny thing is, now you and I have known each other for a long time, and exactly what you're describing now is exactly how you were in university. So I just think it's
except
continued.
Except childless, I'd like to point
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
You're painting a picture of me as this unwedded teen.
There's
a gaggle
true.
Of children.
This is true.
I at least waited.
Yeah, I'm proud of you for that, Case, for sure.
After graduating.
Joining us on the show right now, my good friend Casey Savage. She's got her own blog, Almost Mother of the Year. You have to check it out, almostmotherofthe.year.blogspot.com. Casey, I have to ask you, because in all of this and in our previous conversations that you and I have had, I never hear about your man, the husband, daddy. Like, does he go along with all of this? And I guess part two of that question is, when it comes to Halloween, is it you that's taking them out? Because I feel like you're this insane person who doesn't want them to have all this candy. So do you let him come out with you guys, or how does that work?
Well, you've touched on a really sore point because I'm a single mom. No, I'm just joking. There is a husband in my life. His name is Brad. And guess what? He's also the father of my 3 kids. Oh, yeah. Like, who can say that? Anyway, he's totally involved in my life, although he finds most of the things I do to be quite irritating, so he prefers to keep a low profile. And the only time the public has really seen who he is the one time I was to appear on the Shopping Channel to sell something on it, January 1st, 2006. The only problem was I was 8 days overdue with my second son, and I couldn't quite risk going into labor on air. So unfortunately, he had to sell the Jack-O-Lane juicer for me, and he won't be doing that again, let's just say.
Oh, my goodness. So with regards to Halloween, does he go out with you and the boys, or is it just you and the boys?
Well, it's a trade-off. It's whoever pulls the short straw, right? Because it's a lose-lose. Either, you know, he kind of like me is a bit traditional in the sense that we're fed up with the kids that come to the door and have no manners. Like, what happened? I remember when I was a kid. Don't you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
You'd go trick-or-treating, and you'd always get that old fart that would make you do the trick. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Did that happen to you? And you always had to have a cartwheel ready to roll. Like, you just never knew what was going to happen. And you were willing to do it. These days, you're afraid someone's going to pull a gun on you if you ask them to do a trick, right? You don't want to ask those questions. You're just like, here's your candy. Don't make eye contact. See you later. Please don't egg my house tonight.
Wow. Okay. Well, that actually was another question I have then, because in all of this, you know, I guess the boys, because they're young, they go out quite early. So do you, like, how late do you let your house sort of stay open to pass out the candy, and how do you deal with the teenagers?
Oh, we're probably shut down by 8:01.
Nice. Nice.
Because literally my brain is shut down at 8:01 from the stress of the evening. And the kids go to bed early. They usually go to bed around 7:30, but obviously Halloween they'll probably be in bed by 8 and then staring at their ceiling on a sugar high until a good 1-2 in the morning. But I just shut it down. Lights off, pumpkins. I usually smash them myself to save the teens the trouble. You smash them yourself on the front porch. Whatever, get it done. Throw the bowl of candy out there. Just who cares who gets it, you know? Whether it's the kids or the raccoons, someone's going to eat that stuff before the night's over, and then just fret about it for another 364 days.
Nice. And a question, because I know you mentioned with the kids, especially because I think your kids don't have a lot of sugar intake in general, except for probably, you know, fruit sugars. Do you notice like a big change in them on Halloween night or even leading up to it?
Oh, okay. Anyone out there who has a middle child knows the middle child is the heart melter. Like, that is the kid in the family that is the people pleaser, at least mine. He's just the sweetest. Anyone who meets him, it comes across in photos. You see his little face. Everyone says, there's something so sweet about that little guy. He's the one where from down in the dumps, he'll come up to me and, you know, give me a shoulder massage, even though he's five, and say, Mom, I love you. You're the best. He cares. Okay, get a piece of candy near that kid. I literally, it was like Ultimate Fighting Championships, trying to wrestle a piece of candy out of his hand last year. He turned on me. I swear he growled. He was still in his werewolf costume, mind you, so I don't know what was going on. I swear he growled. And then he lunged at me, and he had his bottom teeth sticking up. Like, he was growling at me. That's what a piece of candy does to my kids. Now do you know why I'm so resentful of this whole occasion?
I feel you might want to break them in maybe during the month of September, where, like, maybe on a Friday starting, you know, September 1st, you give them, like, a piece of chocolate so that you ramp them up to the sugar a little? No?
Well, we've done that before. We've actually done that before because they also act like a pack of wild savages, which coincidentally is my last name, when they're at dinner parties and someone comes out a tray of vegetables or appetizers. So we've done those mock situations before in our home where I stage a dinner party for the kids and then I lay out the appetizers and they have to proceed cautiously one by one and use their manners and take one. But no, when they're near candy, any parent, actually, you know what? You know who doesn't lunge for the candy? Kids who eat a lot of candy. They're the ones that don't lunge for the candy. So I think you're right. I think I've got to give them, you know, a little lollipop here and there, not just for haircuts. And see what happens.
I think that might be an option for you, Case. I'm just saying. And just, I guess, a final question with regards to the whole Halloween shenanigans, and again, specifically regarding the candy. Does Brad agree with the whole 15, you know, candy each rule? Like, is he, because, like, I feel like sometimes the dad is, like, totally willing to take the rest and just, like, scarf it down himself.
Well, I think that's my that might be what happens to the bowl I leave outside at night, because he seems to stay up quite later than I, and then he does have, you know, the telltale chocolate acne the next day. So that could be what's happening there. Also, I think he doesn't want to aggravate the situation by confronting me on my anti-candy stance and my 15-piece policy. So I think what he likes to do is lay low and then reap the reward. Like, I still, in my office to this day, have leftover candy that I'd never ended up putting out last year. You know what it was? I got organic potato chips, and my neighbors turned on me. So I can't even bring them out this year. And I'm not going to eat them. So they're just sitting there. I'm not giving them to the kids.
You were in quite the quandary.
One dad told me I ruined Halloween because they said organic chips. Like, they don't taste any different. Like, what's the big deal here, people? Am I so evil and bad? I need to know.
My goodness. Well, and can people actually answer you back on the Blogspot then? Can they leave comments?
They can. There is a comment section if you dare. And there's actually a poll on there for the month of October asking what you think about Halloween, whether you love it or loathe it, or if you're a pagan and you hate Halloween altogether. So it's totally up to you.
And
I welcome feedback.
Excellent. And I have to ask, what are the boys going to be this year?
We don't know yet.
Oh.
You know, they were going to be, we have, they've got two cousins in the neighborhood that are their age, and one of them's obsessed with Michael Jackson. So the little one, who's four, was going to be Michael Jackson. And then my three boys and their other cousin were going to be the backup dancers from Thriller.
Nice.
But last year, this four-year-old, he pulled a cold turkey and ended up not going out. So I feel like I just can't risk my kids' costumes on this four-year-old's whim. So I might have to pull out another lampshade werewolf. Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Nice. I love it. That's awesome. And Case, before I let you go, because, you know, this whole almost Mother of the Year thing is obviously, I just think it's hysterical. And I think a lot of, you know, especially if anyone is watching, you know, daytime television where they're watching the Rachel Rays and, you know, of course, you know, the godmother of all, Martha Stewart, everybody thinks, you know, these, you know, moms that they have to be rock stars and always nail it. And so a question that I have for you, especially in the last couple of days, it's come out that, you know, Martha Stewart's daughter, Alexis Stewart, has written this scathing book about her mom, saying that, you know, Martha, even though while she was this rock star, you know, homemaker to the public, that Alexis had to wrap her own Christmas gifts. She never got Halloween costumes. And apparently there was no food in the fridge. She'd have to make her own. So what do you feel about, you know, Martha Stewart being basically a big fake?
Well, see, Martha Stewart is the reason why I am so, you know, just riddled with insecurity in my daily life. Because ever since she came on the scene, it was her height of popularity was kind of when I was starting my own family, so I aspired to be exactly like her. But thankfully, before her daughter's book came out, I clued in that this is unattainable perfection. So instead of Martha with her daughter, you know, living this big facade and charade, I've decided to keep my standards really low. And then my kids can only say good things about me, right?
Nice. I love it. That's awesome. Casey, thank you so much for being on the show. And I know that you're going to come back and join us on a monthly basis.
My pleasure. And don't forget, kids, brush your teeth after all that candy.
That's awesome. That's Casey Savage again. Almost Mother of the Year is her blog. Make sure to check it out. almostmotheroftheyear.blogspot.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Have you heard about this? Take a listen.
To come up with some great new products for you all in the future.
The man responsible for transforming a garage startup to a $65 billion industry leader has died. Steve Jobs was the face of Apple for decades. He survived a rare but curable form of pancreatic cancer back in 2004. Some 5 years later, he took a leave of absence from the company, undergoing a liver transplant. A few years later, he took another leave of absence. Jobs was known as a demanding and hands-on leader, one who was involved in even the smallest details of product development. Products like the iPhone, that overturned the smartphone industry, as well as the iPad, a brand new category of tablet computers. Analysts believe Apple has plans for several years of products in the works, and many are confident the company can function successfully even without Jobs.
Apple has unveiled a new iPhone. It's called the 4S. It looks exactly like the previous model, but this one has a faster processor.
Twice as fast at CPU tasks. It's also dual-core graphics.
Sources close to the investigation tell ABC News all the fingerprints on the propofol bottles have been accounted for, and none belongs to Michael Jackson.
The Occupy Wall Street demonstrations are growing throughout the country.
They should have a rally cry like One America or We the People.
Organizer Rick Halsey came to New York from San Diego to get some ideas on how to bring the movement to his part of the country.
We've just had enough of the greed and the dishonesty.
Andy Rooney says goodbye.
In his more than 30 years on the show, Rooney drew a legion of fans by drawing attention to the small things that bother us all.
Here's something called strawberry cream. Can you guess what two ingredients there aren't in strawberry cream? Why, strawberries and cream, of course.
Andy Rooney delivered his 1,097th original essay before saying goodbye.
Kiss frontman Gene Simmons and his girlfriend of 28 years, Shannon Tweed, have finally tied the knot. She's a former playmate and actress who starred in lots of low-budget films like Cannibal Women and the Avocado Jungle of Death.
Tiger Woods no longer considered one of golf's top 50 players.
Tiger Woods has dropped out of the top 50 for the first time in 778 weeks, or nearly 15 years. In that time, Woods has won 14 majors, though the last was in 2008.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
It can be very easy to get into the routine of things and go about your day without being aware of what's going on around you. Now, not that you should be looking for a mugger under every bush or around every corner, but it's very important to be aware of your everyday surroundings so you keep yourself safe. To help guide us as to what we should be aware of and how to protect ourselves from harm is nationally acclaimed safety expert David Nance. He developed the Saber Law Enforcement Training Division, which works with thousands of police departments worldwide. David, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. How are you today?
I am great. Thank you, David. And I have to ask you, I guess, start off by asking you, you know, I don't want to instill fear in our listeners, but I think that a lot of us get caught up in our daily routines and we don't pay as much attention to our surroundings and what's going on.
Well, you're exactly right. We make ourselves soft targets. A soft target is someone that's walking around distracted, and people are very distracted in 2011 by technology, and that's only becoming more and more the case. Walking, you know, across the street, texting or talking on their cell phone, caught up in the course of the conversation and not aware of what's taking place around them. So it's predators, attackers, muggers, they look for people who are not paying attention, who are soft targets, who are easy targets so they can take advantage of them quickly, accomplish their goal with the least amount of effort, the least chance that they'll be caught when they're doing this. So you're exactly right. What we want to do is teach people to be prepared but not scared.
I think one of the statistics for driving is that, you know, you mostly get into an accident not far from home. So I'm wondering if, with regards to this, is it that you sometimes can actually, you know, get attacked or whatever not far from home? Because I almost feel like we feel inherently safe in our neighborhood, even though there can be threats.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You're very vulnerable when walking to and from your car, and not only because you're in the public eye when that takes place, but the attacker also knows that you're thinking about something else. You're thinking about either what you're going to do once you go inside your house or
where you're going to go once you get inside your car. So you're preoccupied with these tasks. You're not thinking about what's taking place around you. You make yourself a soft target and an easier victim.
And what's the most important, you know, thing that women especially, I guess, should be aware of?
Well, I think that you want to. One of the things we teach in my course is we have the Sabre Personal Safety Academy. Is we teach our students to visualize these things in advance. Assume that this situation will happen to you, and when you're in that situation, you've already played it out in your head exactly what you're going to do, what you're going to say, how you're going to keep distance, the eye contact that you're going to make, how you will discourage that threat before that attack occurs. So in hopes that the attack actually does not occur, there are some things that you can do to discourage that threat. Let them know that you're much of a challenge for them, and they should take their time and effort elsewhere. But you absolutely are vulnerable when walking to and from your car, and visualizing these things in advance. But being prepared to act is the most important thing you can do.
And do some women just come off as easy targets? Because I feel like, you know, I guess sometimes we just feel like nothing's going to happen to us, and we're not. I guess sometimes it just feels like we don't look confident as we're going around walking around.
Confidence is huge. You just hit the nail on the head exactly with that statement. They're looking for someone who lacks confidence, someone that looks timid. I mean, you know, attackers, in a sense, some say they're cowards. I mean, they want the easiest route possible to complete their goal. And finding someone that's timid, that doesn't look confident, not paying attention to their surroundings is definitely an easy situation, which is why we call them a soft target or an easy target.
And how, I guess, do you become then a hard target, David?
Well, one of the things we teach in our class, one of the easy way to remember this is to walk like a supermodel does. If you think how a supermodel walks, they walk with their shoulders back, their chin up. We tell them to add the additional step of scanning the area, walking with confidence. And being ready to move, anticipating. Yeah, the other thing you can do aside from that, your body language is to also try to keep strangers at a safe distance. That's the number one thing. So you have time to act, to react, because their action is always going to be faster than your reaction. So the more distance you have between yourself and that individual, the safer you're going to be. And they also have the added advantages. They know when that attack is going to occur. You don't. So that's a big, big disadvantage. They know when the things will take place. You don't. So you have to assume when you're in these vulnerable situations by yourself, most often when it's, you know, dark outside, even though these things do happen in the daytime, you want to keep anyone that you don't know or not aware of at least 4 meters from you or 12 feet. Keep them at a distance. You have time to react. You have time to get to a safe place if necessary.
Something I wanted to ask you as well, David. I remember when I was in university, there was a couple times when I would have to come back from sort of late night study sessions, you know, making making my way back to the dorm. Something that I did, and no one ever even told me to do it, I just did it, is because these were sort of quiet streets around campus. I actually would walk in the middle of the street because I just felt safer there than on the sidewalk, which was obviously near concrete, closer to the building, closer to shrubs. Like, is that something that people should think about too?
Well, it's not a bad idea. Obviously, you want to really be aware of traffic in that situation. But I understand why you did do that. I think it does make sense. It's much more difficult for someone to jump out behind something when you're walking down the center of the street. It's probably better lit than the sidewalks are as well. So you have a better idea. You would be able to see someone approaching you much quicker when you're in that open area like that. So, you know, I understand why you did do that. I mean, there's a lot of things about that do make sense. Obviously, traffic is always a consideration. But beyond that, I'd say, yeah, I mean, that's not bad advice.
Okay. Joining us on the show right now is nationally acclaimed safety expert David Nance. Make sure to check him out. His website is www.personalsafetyexpert.com. David, I wanted to ask you as well, what tools should a woman have with her at all times? And also, I guess, does pepper spray come into that equation?
It certainly does. I'm a big advocate of pepper sprays or personal safety sprays. I mean, they allow you to protect yourself at a safe distance against multiple attackers. I mean, even the smallest keychain sprays have a distance of 3 meters or up to 10 feet. In Canada, for example, though, I know that pepper spray cannot be carried, but dog attack deterrent sprays can be carried. So, you know, people will carry them to protect themselves against stray dogs or to protect their dog against other attacking dogs. But if you have that product with you and you're in a situation where someone is going to attack you, I mean, essentially in that situation where, you know, you feel your safety or your life is in danger, you're able to use just about whatever means you have available to protect yourself. So if you are to acquire a dog attack deterrent spray, it's not a bad idea to keep that in hand when you're in a situation where you feel vulnerable. And you know, and I also want to expand upon that. I mean, people talk about safe neighborhoods or they talk about safe scenarios. A predator can enter a safe neighborhood, and that area automatically becomes unsafe. So don't let your guard down just because you're in a wealthier area or an area where that is low crime. That can change in a second.
And something I think as well that I think maybe women forget, especially because I think as we're brought up, we're taught to be sort of nice and demure. I think it's really important to have a very loud, confident voice if you do have to scream at someone.
100%. That absolutely. You will intimidate a person, a stranger, a man, whomever the person is when you do that. You'll catch them off guard and they'll become the soft target in that situation. It's amazing what a stern look, a mean look, and a loud verbal command like stop, get away, yelling that with authority will do to. That's something that will definitely help discourage a threat. In some situations, that may be enough, but you need to follow up and be prepared to move quickly and get out of that situation should the attack ensue.
When women are going to their parked cars, now whether it's in an underground parking lot or, you know, outside in the parking lot, how should they handle themselves? And how important is it, I guess, for you to maybe like even scan your car before you get in it, and then once you're in, lock the car? Like, I just feel like there must be some sort of tactic or technique to make sure it's a quick entry and into the car and away you go.
You know, one of the things I teach is called the 10 seconds to safety, and it's something you can use when exiting buildings or when pulling into a parking lot, a parkade. And basically what you want to do is take 2 seconds. Let's assume you're pulling into a parking garage. You want to take 2 seconds to scan the area, find the safest place to park, which is the well-lit parking spot closest to the entrance to the building, away from vans or other, you know, individuals. If there are people gathering or one individual, and you want to try to be away from that person. So find the place safe place to park. As you exit, before you exit the vehicle, take 2 seconds to look around, to scan the area. Once you exit the vehicle, now you're at a different vantage point. You're standing up, so you have a better view of the parking lot. Take additional 2 seconds to scan, and before you open the door to go inside, take 2 seconds there just to make sure no one's following you and to make sure everything on the inside of that building, it looks safe as well. Use that in reverse order when leaving, but 10 seconds to safety is definitely something that's easy to remember and it's very easy to execute that'll keep you safe in those situations.
And something else that I think a lot of women don't necessarily think about is when they're going out to socialize. I think a lot of people just feel, I'm going to a bar or club. There's lots of people there. There must be techniques as well, David, that women should be aware of when they are going out to socialize.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, aside from using that technique that I just mentioned, when you're, you know, going to and from your house or these parking lots or whatnot, you also it's best also to travel in pairs. And when you're going out, ideally with your girlfriends or whatnot, you guys are going to stick together. And backing up to something you said previously with the verbal commands, we teach people it's okay to be rude. I mean, it's you're far more likely to discourage a potential threat by being rude than to turn someone, a decent human being, into an attacker because you're rude. So your safety is more important than what someone thinks about you. If you're in a situation where someone's pushing their limits, or you feel uncomfortable, your sixth sense is kicking in saying something doesn't feel right, that's because it probably isn't, and you should do something about that. And if the person crosses a line, you should be rude and just excuse yourself from that situation. And hopefully your friends are paying close attention to you as well. Maybe you have a code word or something where they can step in to get you out of that situation. And then there's the whole other issue of safe drinking that comes into play when you're out socializing as well.
Which obviously means, I guess, obviously not drinking too much. And then I guess being aware of people putting stuff in your drink.
That's exactly it. Yeah, I mean, and one of the safest things you can do is drink out of a bottle, not out of an open cup or a glass. Never set it down. If you are going to accept a drink from a stranger, which I think is highly dangerous, you certainly want to walk with that individual to the bar, watch the bartender pour the drink, and watch it all the way into your hand to make sure it's not being tampered with.
David, a lot of young women are now away at, you know, college or university, and perhaps, you know, away from home for the first time. What do you tell these young ladies who, you know, may be a bit naive to their new surroundings?
Well, and it's a challenging situation. It's an exciting situation for them. So many things are being thrown at them, and it's the first time in their lives where they're truly on their own task with taking responsibility for their own personal safety. So we just tell them to enjoy themselves, but, you know, realize that there are tons of strangers that come onto university campuses that don't go to school there, whether it's, you know, staff members, or it's people that work at the university that are not professors. It's people that visit these universities. So, you know, you gotta keep your guard up. And you're just because you're inside your residential housing, your apartment or your dorm, it doesn't mean you're safe either. There's all sorts of distraction techniques that people use to, you know, try to take advantage of college students, stuff that they've, you know, generally by nature they think people are good, and they think that this situation isn't going to be a negative one. So we want to let people know, we want to let these students know that these things are taking place. We give them statistics, we give them things to focus on. Because these, you know, the sad reality is in North America last year, there were over 10,000 students that were victimized. You're four times more likely to be sexually assaulted than any other age group college students are, and one in five college women are sexually assaulted. So the statistics are quite alarming. So it's something that the college community needs to be aware of.
And it must be important for, you know, a young lady to not be afraid to call campus security if they are leaving the library late or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah, your resident director, your resident assistants, friends. I mean, yeah, you have these numbers on speed dial, and you should. It's far better to take an extra 10 minutes to wait for someone to come and help you out and get you safely across campus than it is to take that chance and walk by yourself in those vulnerable situations.
We've been focusing a lot on women, but I'm assuming that men should not take things for granted either. Like, they could still be mugged as they're walking down the street at night.
Absolutely. You certainly can. That situation happened to me. I was actually in Paris right out of college, and I actually had a conversation with the individual that mugged me. So quite embarrassing, but this stuff does happen. I mean, you know, they use distraction techniques. That's exactly what I just referred to. And, you know, men are certainly vulnerable, and especially now with you know, these flash mobs. I mean, men are being attacked more so than women in those situations, and they're taking their expensive belongings, whether it be their watch, their iPhone, iPad, things of that nature. So you definitely want to keep your guard up. You definitely want to be aware of your surroundings. You want to take those expensive gadgets, and you want to hide them when you're commuting to and from campus or to and from work.
Do you suggest, David, that men and women take, you know, defense classes or martial arts of some sort?
You know, I'm not against it. I think if you have the time and the money to allocate towards that, I think it's a great way to stay in shape. It's great for your brain. I think you can learn some things from it. I do want to say, though, the only disadvantage of that is that, you know, you could encounter someone that's, you know, faster, more skilled, or stronger than you are. And then, you know, that's why it's good to, if you are going to use that, don't assume that you're invulnerable. You still want to keep your best weapon is really your brain. You want to keep your mind sharp. You want to play this stuff out in your mind, know exactly what you're going to do if the situation does occur to you, so you don't freeze, so you don't get overcome by panic. So you're actually, you use the fear that you do have to energize you, to use your voice, to escape that attacker and get to a safe place.
And Dave, before I let you go, I guess a final question would be, if you were just talking right now to a group of women, what would be your key, you know, piece of advice to them as they go about their daily lives and daily routines?
I would say definitely anticipate this happening to you and your loved ones. So when you're in that situation, should it ever happen, you know exactly how to respond. That's number one. Number two would be to make yourself a hard target. Walk with confidence. Think about that supermodel thing that I mentioned before, walking like one of them with your head up, your shoulders back, scanning the area. And then take that 10 seconds for safety tip that I gave earlier. When you start thinking that way, when you start thinking about, you know, how to be prepared, not scared, using that mentality, this stuff comes to you. You're more aware of situations that, you know, that you wouldn't have been aware of before. Distraction techniques are less likely to catch you off guard. You're going to approach that situation with skepticism and excuse yourself from that situation as quickly as possible.
David, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here for your listeners. Thank you.
That's nationally acclaimed safety expert David Nance. Again, make sure to check him out on his website, personalsafetyexpert.com.
Bring on the remix.
Crazy, but love's even more wild when you're angry. You understand why you wanna change it. You're listening to me, just rubbing in trouble.
That's Joe Jonas with Just in Love, remixed by Moto Blanco on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, a very big thank you going out to all of my amazing guests this week, including Mark Saltzman, Casey Savage, and David Nance. And as per usual, I want to leave you with your inspirational quote of the week, this time from Elbert Hubbard. A little more persistence, a little more effort, and what seemed hopeless failure may turn to glorious success. There you go. Have a wonderful week. Don't forget to find us on Twitter, Kelly Alexander, also on our Facebook page, Kelly Alexander Show, and you can always email me as well, kelly@kellyalexandershow.com. Have a wonderful week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander, produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.